Shri Hrida Sadahu Vijay. Rem se Gahu Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dvaita Garadha Shri Vasati Gaur Bhakti Vinda Vijay. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopata Sayam Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Vijay. Vrindavanam Vijay. Vichuram Vijay. Vrindam Vijay. Vrindavasami Vijay. Yamunamai Kijai, Shimati Lasadevi Kijai, Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Kijai, Gaur Premananda. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga, Srila Prabhupada Kijai, Gaur Premananda. So home, Agana, Tiladandasha, Dimanjana, Swatya, Takshun, and Miritam, Yenat is my Shri Gurave Maha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in ignorance. So tonight's topic is the Vedas and Vedic. And as I mentioned before, the word Veda means knowledge, and actually in this particular context, it means perfect knowledge. And we're going to describe what constitutes perfect knowledge and where does it come from. Generally, you have the scholars in the West who consider Vedic to mean only four things. The four original Vedas, you know, the Sama Veda, Yajurveda, Atharva Veda, Rig Veda, these four Vedas. And I'll describe what these four Vedas are. Like the Rig Veda is a Veda of hymns, Sama Veda is a Veda of music, you know, just different melodic things. Yajurveda is the Veda of Swaha, for those of you who don't know what that means. Sacrifices, some of you may have seen fire sacrifices. And we're not talking about something where someone is thrown into the fire sacrifice, like in some movie, you know, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom or something like that. But we're talking about Brahman putting ghee into the fire and saying different mantras. And finally, you have the Atharva Veda, which contains some medical information, some information on how to get weapons. If any of you read the Mahabharata, you'll hear about these astras, these weapons, which is very exciting. So if any of you have that inclination, we can give you a copy of the Atharva Veda later. If you can understand Sanskrit and pronounce it properly, then you can get some nice weapons and you won't get caught up in this whole thing in America with guns and mass shootings. You can wipe out everybody at once. Like with Brahmastra weapons. So, anyway, so these are the four Vedas. However, contrary to some scholars' opinions, the Vedas, the four Vedas themselves, contain information about other Vedas. It's interesting, isn't it? You would say, well, I only accept the four Vedas. Well, if you accept the four Vedas say there's something else, such as Itihasya Purananam Panchama Veda Uchite. It's a famous verse that's found in the four Vedas and also in the Chandogya Upanishad, which that verse indicates that not only are the four Vedas considered Vedas, but the Itihasas, that's histories, you know, like those of you from India know about the Ramayana, the Mahabharata, and histories like that, and Puranas. The Puranas, of course, are like the Srimad Bhagavatam. There's 18 main Puranas, and six for people in the mode of ignorance, six for people in the mode of passion, and six for those in the mode of goodness. So, if you relate to me later what your mode of nature is, I can suggest a Purana for you. Of course, in Kali Yuga, the description is Kaloshudra Sambhava, that everybody in Kali Yuga is in ignorance, so therefore, not that everybody should go to the ignorant, the Puranas that deal with people. The Puranas aren't ignorant, but not that you should go to the Puranas which deal with people in the mode of ignorance. But the only saving grace in Kali Yuga is this Bhagavad Purana, which is able to raise people from the lowest modes to the highest modes. Kalo nastra drishamesha purnarko dunodataha. Because the question in the Bhagavad Purana is raised, by what or who are religious principles protected in this age of Kali? And Krishna Sudhamu Bhagate, Dharma Jnana Yivasa. And the answer is by this Bhagavad Purana and by some of the supplementary Vedic literatures. Anyway, so in the Vedic literatures, it does say that the Puranas and the Itihasas are considered to be part of the Vedic knowledge spectrum. And so, as far as the original Vedas, they're quite large. For example, the Rig Veda is over 1,000 verses. And then you get into the Itihasas, like the Mahabharata, which has 110,000 verses. I mean, it's the largest epic written, far greater than the Iliad and the Odyssey, which some of you may be familiar with from the Western world. And the 18 Puranas, just the 18 Puranas, and there's also secondary Puranas, have hundreds of thousands of verses. And then the Ramayana is a little smaller, but it's still quite lengthy, 24,000 verses. So these are quite voluminous literatures. So let's ask a question. You know, you have all these different literatures, and, you know, what's the purpose of all of them? I mean, why can't you just come out and say, here's the truth? And of course, the Bhagavad Gita does that. Bhagavad Gita sort of distills the essence, and of course, we're going to have Gita Jayanti in 2 weeks, distills the essence of all the Vedic literatures. But the reason the Vedic literatures don't come out and say that, and you got all these mantras and hymns and weapons and other things like that, is because people are at different stages of self-realization. It's not that everyone is ready, just as they say in Bhagavad Gita, sarva dharmam vrijaja mamikam sharanam vraja. I mean, everyone's just ready to surrender. It would be nice, but it's not really a good platform to approach people with. So you don't really, shouldn't go out and just say, just surrender. And if you don't surrender, you're going to hell. Sound familiar? I mean, actually, the first time I walked into a Hare Krishna temple in 1969, before any of you here were born, even before Mother Krishna Pri was born. So, oh, you don't look older than me. So, before any of you were born, they told me that unless I surrendered immediately, gave up all varieties of religiosity, which to me consisted of long hair, unless I did that immediately, then I was going to become a resident of Kali Yuga, which is probably worse than hell. It means people living, being short, living underground, eating each other. And so I ran away when I heard that, because I wasn't ready for that. So the Vedas are, the compiler of the Vedas, it was actually Krishna. Krishna is the goal of the Vedas, but he's also the compiler of the Vedas. He understands that. You know, who is Krishna? Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he understood that, you know, not everybody's ready for the highest, so you've got to give people little steps, as they say in advertising, baby steps. You ever heard this before? I've been studying advertising. It's part of a sannyasi's duty. So, baby steps. When you're trying to convince someone of something, you have little baby steps. So then you say, well, if you really want to become successful in this world, then chant Hare Krishna. Of course, the Vedas start with two different sacrifices, because people are very much into four different things. Dharma, artha, kama, moksha, and avada, that they are. Dharma means like feeling you're really religious on a really religious person on Sunday. Or Sunday. At least they come to the Sunday feast of the Hare Krishna temple. So, you know, really religious. So, dharma. And then artha, mainly people are doing dharma to get some material benefit. Of course, that's called artha, which is translated in America as M-O-N-E-Y. I won't translate that word for you. And people in India, of course, they go to the temple and they say, you know, Om Jai Jagadish Hari, give me plenty of money from me. So, and in America, they do the same thing. There's this whole philosophy that if you're actually religious, God will provide you with three cars. And of course, they say chicken in every pot. At least they don't say that in India. But God will provide you, be wealthy. That's a sign of God's blessings. So generally, people are interested in religion for that purpose, isn't it? Sign of God's blessings, you know, just wealth. And Dharma Artha. And then what do you do when you got plenty of money? Anyone know?
Calm.
You enjoy. And sometimes your enjoyment goes a little haywire. Like there were two people I knew, or maybe I knew, Nalakubera and Manigriva, who were the sons of a very rich man in another planet. You may ask how I knew him. But anyway, why didn't I ask them to share the wealth? But anyway, so Manigriva and Nalakubera, they sort of got carried away, and they committed some errors, mistakes, offenses, and basically they had to become trees. So that's the problem, you know, Janmaishwarya Shudasya Shudir, that one has a lot of wealth or material opulence or intelligence, super intelligent, then it can lead one astray because one becomes proud. Even they say a pauper is proud of the penny. So that's a danger. So the Vedas, they dharma, artha, kama, and then finally you have this moksha. Moksha means basically you become completely, I don't want to use a 60s term, fried out, but you know, completely burnt out. It's also a 60s term. You're completely upset with all this enjoyment, and you think, you know, oh my God, I got to go straight and let me get out of this world. Because you come to realize after about 80 years of living in this world that you're getting older. And then, what do? Get me out of here. You know, God, help me, take me to heaven. Open those pearly gates and let me in. Just like used to have a song when I was young, you know, if you get to heaven before I do, just drill a hole and pull me through. Anyway. I know some of you may have heard that song before. So, anyway, so that's Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, the four different steps. And so sometimes the Vedas and religious literatures have to offer those sort of things just to entice people to take the first step. At least understand there's something greater than you. Like you look up at the heavens and you think, wow, this is great, it's amazing, it's so big. And that's the first step in God realizations. In the Vedic literatures, that's called the Virata Purusha, or universal form in English. Of course, the main purpose of the Vedas is to ultimately bring you to the point of self-realization, to realize who you are, and to escape from this place, this world, to a higher transcendental realm. So that's the ultimate purpose. Of course, there's all these different steps in the way. So the Gita itself, which I said portrays the essence of the Vedic literatures, mentions this in several places. In the 15th chapter, 15th verse, cell phone please, it mentions this. Krishna says, by all the Vedas I'm to be known. And also in the 13th chapter, text 9, Krishna says, Janma, Mrityu, Jara, Vyadi, Dugo, Dashana, Darshanam, that this material world is composed of many, many difficulties, so you should want to get out of this world. And also 8:16 tells us in the Gita, Rama Bhuvana Loka, a famous verse, Punav Artino Arjuna, Mamu Vajita Kantiya, Punam Janma Navijite, that from the highest planet to the lowest planet, there's nothing nice here. You know, it seems nice, but after a while, what do they say? Oh my God, I hate to use this 1960s poem. The chewing gum loses flavor on the bedpost overnight. Anyone's heard that before? There was a song like that. In other words, you chew, and it's real sweet in the beginning, but then you chew and you chew, and the sugar goes out of the chewing gum, and it's just like just exercise for the jaws. So in the same way, you know, we chew. It's called chewing the chew. Purnat purnas charavita charavananam is the Sanskrit for chewing the chew. And then ultimately, you know, within a short while, the taste goes out and we keep chewing the chew, hoping against hope. And that means we're not going to get what we want. So, and then another verse, 8:15, Gali Mashashvatam in the Bhagavad Gita about the mature world. There's all these different things. So sometimes people misunderstand all this negative stuff, thinking, hey, you guys are really negative about this world. And even there was one great philosopher named Albert Schweitzer. You've heard his name before? Albert Schweitzer. He said that the Vedas were mainly world and life negation. But they're not like that. There's actually a positive side. It's not that you just get out. I mean, for example, let's say someone is in prison. This material world is considered to be prison. One name of the prison in Sanskrit is Durga, in case you didn't know. And so you're thinking, let me get out of the prison. But you're not just thinking, let me get out of the prison. You're thinking, what you're going to do when you get out? Just like there was a famous person in Mexico who had his cohorts, Guzman, had his cohorts drill a tunnel so he could get out of prison and enjoy life. Not that he was going to go out of prison and just sit there and just chant Om all the time. But he wanted to get out of prison to have a good time. So that's the whole idea. So there's really a positive aspect to the Vedic literatures. And the Vedic literatures tell us specifically that this human life is meant for searching for the absolute. I remember many years ago, before I came to the Krishna Conscious Movement, that's what I was doing. I was searching for what the truth of life was, where I came from, who I was, who God is, what's the purpose of this whole thing. That's called teleology in philosophy. And nobody could answer my questions, not my professors, not my religious leaders, until I came to the Bhagavad Gita. And then I had those answers there for me. And so one interesting Vedic literature called the Vedanta Sutra mentions Tato Brahma Jyasa, the first verse of the Vedanta Sutra. And it says, now is the time. So implicit in that is, now that you've achieved a human form, because there are many forms in this world, you can't tell an animal, now is the time, my dear dog, to look for the absolute truth. And the dog, of course, will lick you. And you tell him, listen, I'm not the absolute truth. Please chant the holy names. And he won't. So anyway, so this is specifically meant for human beings. And the Garga Upanishad states something very, this is one of the Upanishads, states something very interesting in this regard. It says, a miser is one who does not solve the problems of life, but quits this world like a cat or a dog. So really, human life means specifically that, to solve the problems. And the Vedas also give another interesting metaphor. They say that the, first of all, liberation is for humans again. And the human body is like a boat. I mean, of course, that doesn't mean you just sit on the body and just float across the ocean. And the captain of that boat is interesting, is the spiritual master. Because we in this Krishna Conscious Movement have as our captain, or the topmost captain, let's say, the captain, just like we say, Prabhupada means the one who other masters sit at the feet of. So I guess you had a pile captain or something like that. You know, the captain that other captain pod or something. Whatever it is, that other captains would sit at the feet of. So Prabhupada is like the captain of the boat that goes across the ocean. And this ocean, of course, is not just the Atlantic or Pacific Ocean. This ocean is the ocean of material existence. And guess what? The Vedic literatures are the favorable breezes that carry one across this ocean. So this is actually very nice. So this is the purpose of the Vedas. So exactly where do the Vedas come from? Where do all these Vedic literatures come from? And the Vedic literatures themselves tell us that the Vedic literatures come from the breathing or the speaking of Krishna, the Absolute Truth. And that's really our epistemology. Here's another big word for you, epistemology. What? How do you know what you know? Because we're talking about perfect knowledge. That's what I first started this thing in, this discussion with, that the Vedas contain perfect knowledge. So perfect knowledge cannot be obtained through our senses. You know, seeing is not necessarily what is believing, but it's not necessarily the truth. You can see many things that don't exist, and you could not see things that do exist. So it cannot be obtained through our senses, cannot be attained through what's called the inductive process, which is called anuman, just examining different things and coming to some general conclusion, but can only be obtained by taking information from someone who is on a higher platform. And, you know, you go to higher platforms. And the highest platform is God. You know, you can't get higher than that. I know many of you would like to be God, but that post is already taken. There's actually one religion where you become a god of the universe. That's okay. You can become Lord Brahma. But you can't go higher than that. That's about it. So, the Mahabharata and the Puranas, they're breathing, coming from the breathing of the Absolute Truth. And the Gita itself, it's an interesting verse, corroborates this. It says, third chapter, text 15, says, regulated activities are prescribed in the Vedas, and the Vedas are directly manifested from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And of course, the original person that was instructed by the Vedas is called Lord Brahma. He's like the first person within this universe. And then he passed on that knowledge through what's called a chain of disciplic succession. Narada was the second disciple, Vyasa was the third disciple, Shuka was the fourth. So, down to the present day in Asia, of course, there's Divine Grace, whose Murti form or figure you see sitting on the seat up there. And so this is called the Parampara or disciplic succession, transmission of knowledge. So also the Vedas are called Aparashaya, which means they didn't come from any mundane person. They're actually transcendental to this world. So anyway, we talked about epistemology already. So then we'll talk about how to receive the Vedas, which is interesting, because it's not that you can just go to the Vedas, you know, the Veda store, which sometimes is described as like a pharmacopoeia, or for those of you who don't know what that means a drugstore, and pick out whatever, that drug looks nice. Oh, I have a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of that, put them all together, wow, maybe I'll get high. So, or cure my disease. But you have to go to a pharmacist to prescribe, or a doctor actually, a pharmacist gives you the medicine. The doctor prescribes the medicine. So in the Vedic literature, it is mentioned that in order to understand the Vedic literatures, you have to accept something called someone called a guru. Now that's interesting. You know, what is a guru? And we'll describe that in a second. So the Vedic literature is described, Tadvikanartu, Sadguru, Meva Vichet. That's a verse from the Upanishads, in fact, which says if you want to have transcendental knowledge, you have to accept a guru. That's from the Mundaka Upanishad. And the Gita, of course, talks about this transcendental disciplic succession, Evam Parampara Praptam, in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. So, as we're looking for the proper guru to guide us in the Vedic literatures, you know, where do we look? You know, guru, guru, on the wall. Or eeny, miny, mo, catch a guru by the transcendental toe. If he hollers, he's not on the transcendental platform, and let him go. That's one way. Anyway, so the way you look for him, are there certain qualities? I mean, first of all, he has to come in disciplic succession. He has to be a member of the disciplic club. He has to have a guru himself. I mean, that's basic 101. But there are other certain qualities that he has to have. And these are mentioned by various other gurus, great saints in Vedic literatures. And we'll give one verse, Vajra Vegam Manasakrota Vegam, Jiva Vegam, Udurupashta Vegam, which means he must have his senses under control. That means, what does that mean? That means that he's, even though the senses, what are the senses? The tongue, the eyes, genitals, the hands, everything like that, the speech, the belly, all those things, he has to focus on self-realization. You can use any of those things in self-realization. Like we're going to have prasadam soon. So prasadam means food, so you're using your tongue for Krishna. But you can also use your tongue for other things. You could use your tongue to eat something that's going to drive you down in a karmic sense, which is, you know, meat, fish, or eggs, and things like that. You can use your tongue to talk about superheroes, if you like. You know, Iron Man or Copper Man. Dog Man. You know, all these men. I don't even know all these people, but anyway. So you can use your tongue for that. That's called prajalpa, which will drag you down. So someone in spiritual life will use their tongue for spiritual purposes. And all their senses, even the genitals, can be used for spiritual purposes. And their ears, of course. We're hearing about Krishna. Sabhaimana Krishna, Vaidaravindaya. So there's ways to utilize each and every one of your senses. So one of us is a spiritual master, has all the senses properly focused. And there's other things mentioned, Simhetpani, Shrotun, Brahmanishtam, and that translation of that is a spiritual master must be a servant of his own spiritual master, not inventing anything, must have heard nicely, must not be falling down from the practices. So then, this is a prerequisite. And there's one book called the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which mentions that, I'll read in Bengali, Apaniyachari Bhakti Karila Prachar. First, one must become purified before they can become a guru or teach. Purified means 24 hours a day. It's not that they just check in. Like one goes to work, you know, you go to work, you have a punch card. He has a punch card. So, not that you just punch your card in the morning, time to become a guru. Boom. Okay, 8 o'clock in the morning. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Ramayanam namaskritcha. Like that. And then 5 o'clock, punch out. Okay, let's go to the bar, boys. So, it's a 24/7 job. So, it's a tough job. I can tell you that. You don't get any vacations with pay. You get work with pay sometimes. Anyways, so one should accept someone to guide them in the Vedic literatures. And then, but who is qualified to accept a guru? That's very interesting because generally you hear this story in India that if someone really wants to be a Brahmin or a disciple of a guru, they have to be born in a Brahmin family, right? You agree with that? They have to have a nice name like Sharma, Trivedi, Chaturvedi, Maharaj, whatever. So, I am Maharaj. So, they have to have all these nice names. But the Vedic literatures don't actually say that. Of course, the Bhagavad Gita tells us Chaturvarnamaya Shrishtam Gunakarma Vibhagasha, one is known by his qualities, not by his birth. There's no janma in that equation. So there's an interesting story told in the Vedic literatures about who was actually qualified for spiritual life. It's called the story of Satchakama, and I'll tell that story very briefly. Satchakama means someone who loves the truth. That's the literal translation of that name. So once upon a time, there was this young man, and he approached the guru. And he said, I want to be a spiritual, which is called a Brahman. Actually, the word Brahman literally means one who knows spirit. You know, many times people think Brahman means someone of a certain caste, or someone with a thread around their necks, which costs about 2 pais, maybe 1 rupee right now. It's gotten more expensive. So he went to a guru and said, I want to be a spiritualist. And the guru said, okay, fill out this form. Who's your father? If we got to the blank, where is the father? He said to the guru, you know, I don't know. Ligur said you got to find it out. You know, we need a whole history on you. Back on the ship. So, like we do in ISKCON. So, he went to his mother to find out, because that's how you find out who your father is. I mean, that's also called Vedic epistemology. You know, how do you know what you know? And the best way to know who your father is, you go to your mother. I mean, if she doesn't know, who else is going to know? So, he went to his mother, and his mother, unfortunately, was not interested in monogamy, to say the least. And so she said, I don't know, my dear son. And it could have been him, or him. And so that's a little embarrassing, isn't it? Actually, in some countries, you're not allowed to put your father's name down when you enroll in school. Because there's so much illicit life. It's amazing. It's amazing. Some country, I'm not going to mention what country, but it's a country that I preach in sometimes, that you're not allowed to do because it'll embarrass the kid. That shows the degradation of Kali Yuga. So, anyway, so he goes back to his guru and says, we don't know, you know, my mother doesn't really know. And his guru said, you're a real spiritualist. You're a real Brahmin. And everyone was wondering, all the other disciples were wondering, what, has Gurudev lost his mind? And then the guru explained, that actually this person is telling the truth. That's actually one of the qualities for someone to be a bona fide spiritualist. You have to tell the truth. In other words, you have to be in the mode of goodness to be able to progress spiritually. I mean, if you're going to lie, then you're not really a candidate. So spiritual life is not for liars or cheaters or anything. You have to at least be maturely elevated to that point. And anyone can do it. From any background, you can tell the truth. I mean, even if you're a mass murderer, you just say, you know, Gurudev, I killed a lot of people before I joined the Hare Krishna movement. Well, maybe there's another temple for you. So, but anyway, I mean, obviously we have to be careful with something like that. But in any case, there's no prerequisite. Anybody can come to Krishna consciousness. And in fact, you have books like the Hari Bhakti Vilas that state that by the proper process of coming in touch with the guru and getting initiated, that process can be compared to alchemy. Now, alchemy is an interesting process, and Prabhupada actually taught us how to make gold from bell metal. And I'm not going to tell you how to do it. But that's only for sannyasis to know, because we need to spread the movement. So alchemy is a process by which you can take bell metal or just ordinary metal and turn it to gold. So the example given, or the metaphor given, is that by the process of coming in contact with the guru and taking initiation and all those things, then it is like bell metal being turned to gold. In other words, whatever one was before, it's not important. Because you can become transformed. And of course, there are stories in the Vedic literatures about that. Magrari the hunter, who became a pure devotee because of Narada Muni's preaching. You have a prostitute who became a pure devotee because of Haridas Thakur's preaching. Famous story about Niti. Hare Krishna. Hope they become pure devotees. So, Valmiki, who was a Ratnagar, who was actually a dacoit, he became a pure devotee. And so many stories like that in the Vedic literatures of just people chanting the holy names, coming in contact with a pure devotee. Okay, so then once you come in contact with a guru, I'll keep it short, but it's giving a basic view, so those of you who don't know about the Vedas and those who do know can explain to others about these things, because people often ask, you know, what do you believe in? Why do you believe in what you believe in? Where does it come from? What is Vedic? We hear this word all the time. And we devotees always say, you know, this is Vedic, a Vedic movement. So, anyway, the Vedas are teaching knowledge. And the different aspects of knowledge that they teach, I'm going to give you just a brief overview of the three aspects of the Absolute Truth, the impersonal aspect, the personal aspect, the localized personal aspect, and the aspect of God who lives in the spiritual world. Then there's the three energies, the material energy, spiritual energy, and us, the jiva soul. There's the information about karma, reincarnation, that's called samsara. Samsara means the chain or wheel of rebirth in this world. There's information about the modes that control us, they're called gunas. There's information about the presiding, let's say, controlling personalities in this world, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. There's information about the conclusion or the goal of human life. So that's basically it. So as far as the history of the Vedas are timeless. Although we generally talk about the Vedas having been noted down or remembered 5,000 years ago. And because 5,000 years ago people had very sharp memories, so they could remember something upon once hearing it. But actually, they're timeless. Because knowledge is knowledge. It's not that knowledge was invented 5,000 years ago. But, for example, we know that we're not the body, we are the soul, and that's always true. That was true 5,000 years ago, that was true 10 million years ago, 100 million years ago. So knowledge is timeless. So when we're talking about Vedas, we're actually talking about timeless knowledge. So all attempts to date that knowledge are actually fruitless. I mean, they have many attempts, of course, based upon language analysis of the Sanskrit. There's one thing called glottal chronology, based upon how language changes with time. And really, they don't come up with any conclusions. And even if they understood how old some particular literature was in a particular written form, they wouldn't understand how old that knowledge was. You know, they can say, well, this is written. I mean, for example, I can analyze Shakespeare and say when it was written by the type of English he uses. But Shakespeare is also presenting some timeless truths. I'm not going to get into Shakespeare's timeless truths, but any things that are always true. So the Vedic literatures present all these things that are always true, and they're timeless. So as far as the Vedic literatures, we talked about the three, the four original Vedas, and there's the Upanishads, which means basically sit closer or approach a spiritual master. And one of the prominent Upanishads is the Isopanishad. There's others such as the Mundaka, Svetashvatara, Katra Upanishad. And then there's the commentaries on the Upanishads, which are called the Vedanta Sutras. And then there's the commentaries on the Vedanta Sutras, and then there's the histories, which we mentioned before. And today, of course, we mainly concentrate on the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the postgraduate study of the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is the undergraduate study of transcendence. And the Srimad Bhagavatam is the postgraduate study, and the Chaitanya Charitamrita is the postgraduate study. And then you can go on further study writings of what we call acharyas or teachers who elaborate on the same teachings. Elaboration means greater detail on the same teachings. So there's, in other words, unlimited things to read and practice and realize. Because we mentioned about coming in touch with the guru, tadvijnanartham means you realize it. It's not just book knowledge. I know the students in the university, they have some book knowledge, and then they study, they do something called pulling an all-nighter before an exam. Ever heard of that before? And then the next day, take the exam, and they forget everything. And I've done that. You know, I still have traumatic experiences from university 50 years ago or whatever. And so it's not like that. It's knowledge you realize. But jaksha bhagamam dharmyam shushukam kartamavyam. That it's called the king of all knowledge because you can directly perceive what you're learning as you progress spiritually. There's a spiritual dimension, a spiritual reality that you can perceive that's simultaneous to this reality. So, anyway, so this is basically all we have time for. I have a lot more information, but all we have time for today as far as the Vedic literatures, how to approach the Vedic literatures, and perhaps next week we can talk about the acharyas who taught, the main acharyas who taught the Vedic literatures. and elaborating on them and had many disciples and the different disciplic successions. So this is leading up to the Gita Jayanti. So any questions or comments? Does anybody have a guess?
You mentioned one qualification in the story about being truthful to accept initiation.
And can you also speak briefly on what are the qualifications of a disciple? I've also heard that a spiritual master has to be careful about accepting unqualified disciples.
Don't remind me. So, anyway, I mean, let's talk about being truthful in a wider context. Generally, we think that being truthful means, you know, I shall not tell a lie. But being truthful means sticking to your promises, too. I mean, that's very important. In modern culture, we have all sorts of ways to get out of promises, beginning with crossing your fingers and hoping to lie when you're young, and ending up with getting married and not sticking to your vows when you get married. I mean, there's all these different things, or even taking initiation and not sticking up to your promises. So one of the qualities for a disciple is dritta vritta, someone who's very determined to stick to their obligations regardless. That's the mode of goodness. Mode of goodness is characterized by great determination to achieve a spiritual goal or achieve a higher goal. Mode of passion also, there's a lot of determination, but that's to get material things like money and everything like that. So telling the truth, I would say that is the essential part. And then telling the truth, promising, keeping your promises when you approach a spiritual personality, and then having a service attitude. As Krishna says in the Gita, tadviti pranipatena, pariprashnena. You ask questions, yes, but then you serve. You begin to serve, and to serve in a way that's favorable. Favorable means you serve someone giving them or doing what they ask, not what you think. I mean, for example, let's say if I'm taking prasadam and someone serves me borscht. And some of you may know that, that to me, that's like torture. So that's unfavorable service. They may think, it's the best thing for you, Maharaj, but I will not be too happy. Won't be a happy camper, as they say. From that, so therefore, it's doing something favorable like that and following the practices. And also, it's an internal thing. It's not only external. You know, internally cultivating this love for Krishna, because we're engaged in bhakti yoga. Bhakti yoga means that yoga of devotion. There's many other types of yoga that you don't need devotion with. Hatha yoga, you don't need devotion. Ultimately, hatha yoga has to culminate in bhakti. I mean, Patanjali stated this. But in the beginning stages of hatha yoga, you're just trying to stop vritti, the churning of the senses. But ultimately, you have to come to the point, Ishvara Pradana, which means, as Patanjali stated in the Yoga Sutras, of devoting yourself to God. And devotion means to want to please the person you're devoted to. You could say, I love you, but I don't want to please you. You know, imagine a husband saying that to his wife, I really love you, my dear wife, but I don't want to do anything that pleases you. I just want to love you. So, you know, so there's a lot more entailed in approaching the spiritual master than just telling the truth, but that's the beginning stage. So any other questions or comments? Yes.
You explained about the Vedas and like the different processes that are mentioned in the Vedas, but I may be incorrect, but as much as I know that the Vedas have very little description about the ultimate truth, which is Lord Krishna. It doesn't really explain much about Lord Krishna. Maybe some Veda has a few sutras.
Well, the Yajurveda actually has Omta Vishnu Paramam Padar Prashanti Yatsurya. The goal is actually there. And in every Vedic mantra, you're tricked to chant God's name. I mean, you always have that Om. And Om is the same as Hare Krishna. A-U-M, you know, rather than Krishna, a living entity. So it's always there, but they're trying to take people step by step. In fact, what you're mentioning is actually true. Krishna in the Gita states this too. Trigunya Visha Veda Nish Trigunya Bhavarjana. He says the Vedas mainly deal with the three modes of material nature, you know, things of this world. And then he tells Arjuna, Nirdwan Go Ninja Savastoni Yoga Kshema Admaban. Rise above these things. You're not meant for this preliminary stuff. I mean, for example, if you look at education, most education is not postgraduate education. And there's probably more people in kindergarten than the other grades, and you know, it gets less as you go up. You know, so you can say, well, kindergarten is the goal, you know, playing with blocks, you know, A, B, C, D, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, P, like that. But no, that's just preliminary. So you can get to the point of reading, and getting to the point of reading is just preliminary, so you can study more. And that study more is just getting to the point so you can get a PhD later on or something like that. And that, the purpose of that is just make more money. But you'll find preliminary stuff usually is a, if you had to take a poll, is the vast majority of any system of education. So one has to know the goal. You know, just like when I went to school, I said to my mother, why did I have to study this? You know, why did I have to study history? American history. 1492, Columbus discovered, sailed the ocean blue. And my mother said, "No, you want to be a good devotee when you grow up, don't you?" I wish I said that. But anyway, my mother presented me that it, when you grow up, you know, you don't want to just be on the street, like, poor, you know, that's a typical explanation, and just begging for a living, do you? And I just didn't see the connection between America being discovered, which it was, in 1492, and living on the street. I didn't just say, huh? This is a non, as I say, non sequitur, although I didn't know that word when I was young. I said, what is the connection, Mom? And she said, well, people are starving in Europe. And I said, send them my food. Don't make me eat too much. So, that really dates me, isn't it? World War II, after World War II. So, you know, you will find the vast amount of knowledge in any particular subject matter is going to be preliminary. So you have to really see it in its entirety, rather than just, you know, another example given sometimes, even in the Vedas, is that if you look at an elephant, you know, if you're a blind man, the typical example, you're touching different parts of the elephant, and one person is thinking, hey, it's a tree. Another person is thinking, it's a snake. And unfortunate person is under the tail and thinking something different. they don't see the totality of the elephant. Of course, although everything they're saying is true to a certain extent, you know, they're perceiving a part of it, but you have to look at something. What do they say also, another saying in English is you don't see the forest for the trees. You don't see the totality of the forest. So, but Krishna says the same thing. He says the Vedas are mainly meant for those of the three modes of nature. Just rise above those things. You know, you're on a higher platform. I mean, it's not that a PhD has to go to kindergarten again. You know, imagine if Arjuna said, you know, I want my mommy. It would not be so appropriate. So, any other questions or comments? Yeah. One more, and then you can take prasada.
When you were speaking about, was it the Upanishad, meaning come closer? In other words,
means come closer, sit closer to someone giving knowledge. Yeah.
To hear, and it just, the image just popped for me because I was thinking then to ask the question, what that means though is that all that Vedic knowledge is available through hearing.
Yes.
Through the degree to which we can hear or accept.
Right? Submissive.
So that's key, right?
Yes, yeah, submissive hearing. Hearing. Of course, submissive hearing means bhavanti ritkarna rasayana gata. That's from the Bhagavatam. To hear and let the sound vibration go from the ear to the heart.
Right. It's the only way that it can be opened, right?
Yeah, yeah. And then that's the way the Vedic knowledge is understood. But in order to do that, one has to have faith, and one has to develop faith in a particular, in the Vedic literatures, and also faith in Guru, it's mentioned, Yasha Devi Parabha, Diryata Devi Dattaguru. If one has that faith, then everything is revealed to one. Because the the heart becomes purified. That one, Shaita Yudhavati, Yudhavati, Yudhavita, Shaita, Katatara, Yakta, Prakashante, Mahatmana. I don't want to throw too much Sanskrit here. So, yes, good point. So now we have faith that taking prasadam, we will be happy. So there'll be prasadam served downstairs in the pavilion. And as some of you may have noticed, we're doing extensive renovation on the temple right now. They're going to be having a major, let's say, commercial kitchen downstairs so we can prepare more prasadam, so you can take more. And distribute more prasadam and, you know, facility for the deities. It's very exciting. Of course, it's costing some money. And also, we're actually putting in a lift on the side of the temple. The lift is already here. It just has to be installed. A lift on the side of the temple so that those who are not able to climb stairs are able to come and see the deities and do service and things like that. So there's a lot going on here. Our new temple project will be done in time. The temple across the street in time at the proper time. But right now we find ourselves with this imperative of fixing up what we do have so that we can provide facility within our means. And also we'll have, there'll be a Gurukul will be is planned out and it will be under construction very soon. So there's a lot of exciting things, and if any of you are interested in participating in any way, you know, giving volunteer labor or, you know, financially or anything like that, you can see me or see Leela Shakti, who's the one making the announcements. Okay, thank you very much. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
All glories to His Holiness, Srila Goswami, Goswami Ki Jai.